Today on The Grave Talks, You Must Leave, a conversation with Christopher J. Brown. During the tumultuous teen years between 14 to 18, Chris Brown lived in a haunted house. Not just the simple lights turning on and off type haunting, but the "we want you out of this house and we'll try to kill you" type haunting. Four traumatic years that still haunt Chris to this day. What did the spirits in this home want? And why were they so serious about making this family flee? That's what we discussed today on The Grave Talks.
So it absolutely began because I lived in a haunted house when I was younger. I was probably between the ages of, if I had to guess, like 14 and maybe even into 18. But this place, I called it like cliche haunted because, you know, all the things you hear about in the stories and the things you see on YouTube videos of these, you know, crazy haunted places, like it happened there. Mm-hmm. There was shadow figures that were hanging out. There was, you know, knocking on the doors and there'd be nobody there. I always used to hear a man and a woman and they were arguing. And I always used to be like, there's nobody in the house. And, you know, sure enough, there wouldn't be. The TV would sound like it was on, nothing. Pots and pans that were on the tops of shelves for years and years would just come flying off. I mean, this place was, it was pretty intense and it was pretty, it didn't want us there. At least it didn't feel it. So living there really carried over my interest in all of this stuff. And then just being able to feel that energy kind of like in my gut all the time, carried over with me into adulthood.
Take me back prior to you getting into that house and you were about 14. Did you have any interest in the paranormal? Was it something that was in your, you know, interest, you know, book, if you will, or did it all kind of spark up once you entered that house?
So I had zero interest before I got into the house. I mean, I really didn't even know what it was. I mean, I had no exposure to it. I mean, I remember my mom telling me little stories here and there about this house in Yarmouth, Maine, that she lived in where, you know, weird, spooky things would happen. And, you know, I kind of was always like, well, that's neat, but it was never something that was really anything I was passionate about for sure. So before then, no, I really didn't know because I didn't have like the reference points to it. And then once I got in there, I'm a very see it to believe it kind of person. So if I see it and experience it, I'm more inclined to be like, you know, okay, what is this and what does it all mean and how can I investigate it? So being in that house really was the spark that drove all of this for me for sure.
Is this the house that your mother talked to you about or was that a different house?
That was a different place. Okay. This was a place in Portland, Maine, and you know, very unassuming. You know, mm-hmm. Right on Ocean Avenue, which is a very like kind of suburban area of Portland. You know, if you were to look at it from the street, you wouldn't say, "Yep, that's a haunted house."
Only if you were in Amityville on that road, that would be the only reason.
Yeah, exactly. Very unassuming. And, you know, I would have friends that were flat out non-believers. You know, I'd tell them, I'm like, dude, weird stuff's happening at the house. And they'd be like, okay, yeah, whatever. And they would come over and they would literally never come back because they were like, look, I don't know what is there. I don't care. It freaked me out. I'm scared. I'm leaving.
And that's an age, too, where it's difficult to be different as well, you know, to suddenly be like, oh, yeah, my house is haunted. Like, if you want to get looked at strangely, go ahead and start talking about that. But for sure. So when walk me back to the beginning here, though, you get into the house. What is your first experience? When did you first start feeling there's something off? Did you have an off feeling like literally the first day you got in there? Or when did it kind of start to set into you? There's something going on here in detail. Like, walk me through that day.
All right. That's like actually a great question. You know, and it was really kind of gradual. You know, when we first got in the house, it was kind of new, it was exciting. I had moved around a whole bunch when I was a kid. We were all over the place, all over New England, left and right, sometimes in really good situations and sometimes not so much. I mean, one time we lived in a shack on the edge of a lake and we had to literally fish for our food. So this was a breath of fresh air, you know? Mm-hmm. So going into the house, we moved everything in and it was a gradual process because right away it wasn't like we walked in and all, you know, everything was going nuts. Mm-hmm. It was a slow buildup, but I remember little things started happening here and there. I'd be in my room and all of a sudden you hear like dunk, 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 you know, a knocking on the door and you're like, all right, come in. okay, come in. And you open the door and there'd be nobody there. Mm-hmm. And so little things like that started happening, very subtle stuff. You know, the beds would start to shake and rock back and forth. And, you know, and I tried to debunk it over and over again and be like, okay, well, maybe my brother is, you know, horsing around with his friends and the house is shaking, or it could be mm-hmm. the wind. It could be any other reason. But then it started to ramp up a little bit. I remember, like I said, friends would come over and they would start to say like, hey, you know, who's downstairs on the second floor in your niece's room? My niece was an infant at the time, so she was still in a crib. And I would be babysitting her, so there'd be no one else. And I'm like, nobody. And they'd be like, okay, well, there was somebody, like a man, standing over her crib. I run downstairs. Sure enough, nobody's there. So it started to build up in that sense. I remember, too, when the shadow figures started to actually showing themselves or showing up, that was the weirdest thing. My friend Nick, who lived with me at the time, he was the first one to kind of notice it, if I recall right, because I was, you know, smoking cigarettes or whatever. And so I was downstairs outside on the porch. You know, my mom would definitely kill me if she found out I was smoking in the house. But so I go out on the porch. He's upstairs. He comes down. He's going to use the bathroom. And he sees what he thinks is me standing in the hallway. So he says, hey, you know, move. And he goes to push what he thinks is me. And all of a sudden, you know, this shadow figure darts around the corner, down the stairs, and seemingly out through the front door where I was standing. And this shook him to no end. The faucets would start to kind of turn on by themselves. And then you would get this feeling in a certain part of the house that, like, you had to run. You know, it was almost as if somebody had grabbed you by the spine and was just forcing you to get away. This very evil, not so friendly feeling.
Let's take a stop there and take a few steps back. When these things started to happen, when you had your bed shaking and you're trying to debunk it and you're trying to figure out, you know, what is going on here, are you connecting dots enough to say, oh, yeah, and you're justifying it in your mind that it is something else? Or are you really starting to think, no, there's something more to this? Or did you ever have, like, those moments of, you know, you were very solid on your answer, like, no, it's just them doing this, it's just them doing that?
I'm not really sure what you mean. I think so with the debunking process, it came with the feelings of it too. So it wasn't just mm-hmm. the bed was shaking.
Okay.
It would come with like an energy in there as well. And so I'm like, okay, that combined with everything that's going on, I'm like, there's got to be more to this. So if it was just the bed shaking, I could see like, okay, yeah, maybe I sure. could debunk it because of whatever reason.
With you having that, the ability to feel those things and the energy and things of that nature, were you the only one in your house that had the emotions connected to these encounters, or did your mom, did anyone else have that, those feelings as well?
Funny enough, my mother experienced absolutely nothing. And to this day, if you ask her, she's like, you guys are just, you know, something else was going on, mm-hmm. which we all laugh about because we're like, no, there was definitely more going on. And my sister never talked about it either. I have one brother and one sister. She never talked about it until years later when I was just talking about the bed shaking. And she was like, oh, my God, mine did that, too. And then we got into this conversation about more and more things happening. My brother, on the other hand, his experience was really kind of like one that shook him pretty bad. And actually he moved out because of it, but he came up the stairs, and I was in my room. We were across the hall from each other. Mm-hmm. So I heard him come upstairs. I heard him go into his room. I hear him say, hey, and then I hear this bang and he's like, what? And then he darts across the hallway, like faster than you could blink. He's in nothing but his boxer shorts, shaking like a leaf on a tree, just terrified. And all he could say is, there's a ghost in my room. There's a ghost in my room. And after 5 minutes, he like kind of calmed down. And I tried to get him to explain what happened. And so he came upstairs. He was getting changed after work. His bed was kind of at an angle on the edge of the wall there because he was rearranging. He was going into his bureau and he heard someone behind him go, hey, like kind of like that, like a male kind of husky voice. And he turned around. He thought it was me, like playing a prank on him. He goes to, this is the bang I heard. He lifts the bed and he moves it over to see if I was hiding underneath it. Nothing. And then something louder said, hey, behind him again. And so that's when he darted into my room. Needless to say, 2 weeks later, he moved out. And I was like, yay, I get to have my brother's room because it was street side. It had a good view. My first night in there, I woke up to a man standing over my bed and I screamed bloody murder because I was terrified. And immediately it was gone. And that's, you know, that stuff continued to happen throughout.
Were you and your brother communicating about your experiences back and forth at this time? Had he relayed to you what he had experienced?
He, like I said, after he had calmed down, mm-hmm. he was able to tell me what was okay. going on. And okay. his explanation of it was, he's like, look, I don't know what it was. I don't care. I'm leaving and I'm never coming back. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he really didn't get too in depth with me, unfortunately, but it really shook him. And like I said, I've watched my brother get stabbed literally 5 times in front of me at a gas station. And he still walked away thinking he was just sweating and not bleeding. So he's a tough guy.
Yeah.
So for him to say something like, you know, I don't know what that was, but I'm leaving, I'm never coming back, it was pretty substantial for me.
Mm-hmm. Is he also sensitive to these things as well?
He might be, but he doesn't talk about it. I know my mom used to always jokingly say that she was psychic. You know, she'd mm-hmm. be like, oh yeah, I know when you guys are lying to me, or I know when someone's going to call. And sometimes she would absolutely do it, but she was the only one in my family that ever expressed any sort of ability to feel energy or even kind of do any sort of psychic stuff.
So tell me more about how you kind of came to the conclusion. Obviously, a lot of eerie, bizarre things going on in the house that are certainly unsettling. But where does it start to turn in your mind where it goes from, oh, the house is haunted, there's something going on here, to I think there's something dark in this house?
Well, because like I said, it was a gradual thing. So every now and again, you'd hear like the voices mm-hmm. or whatever, a disembodied voice, or like a pot and a pan would fall off a shelf. And so little things like that started happening. And that was just kind of like one of those, like you look over and you're like, well, that's kind of odd. Like there's no explanation for that.
Yeah.
So there was no feeling along with it. The more increasingly kind of agitated, or like the longer we were there, I don't really know what was going on then, because it was quite a while ago now, but the more it kind of picked up, the more the foreboding feelings came with it. I remember very, very specifically rounding the corner, and it was the second floor that was the most active, but I remember rounding the corner of the second floor up to the third floor staircase and going up there and just like I said, just wanting that urge to just run and not be there anymore. And I would every time. Regardless, I would turn that corner and I would run because I was just terrified. So it was a buildup to the kind of more darker side of everything that was going on there. And as a matter of fact, I actually was going to take a shower one time, and this was pretty remarkable. This was really kind of the switching point for me that said, okay, what is here is not nice. I was going to take a shower, and the bathroom was on the second floor. I realized I needed a towel, so I went to go put my shoes down in front of this pull switch light that was out in front of the bathroom. Mm-hmm. I thought to myself, oh, I need a towel. So the towels were downstairs in the laundry room. I went to go downstairs, and the pull switch string was around my neck. And I stepped down, and it yanked me back, and I had caught my balance, and, you know, I was completely shooken up by it.
Yeah.
And at the time, you know, I was kind of a little depressed, and I'd had some kind of emotional things going on. So it had that succeeded, and had I actually choked and died, people would have assumed I had committed suicide, which is insane. I looked, I tried to debunk again, like, okay, let me recreate this. Let me find any other reason as to why, you know, this was paranormal, and I couldn't. I absolutely couldn't. So I ended up cutting the string and it left a red mark, and it was just that shook me up pretty good. So that's when I knew whatever was there was nothing friendly, you know?
Yeah. I mean, just the idea of the pull switch getting, you know, just being able to do that, you know, it's not exactly an easy, you know, it would take a little work, you know, to get your pull switch to be turning into a noose, you know, mm-hmm. more or less for it to do it by itself.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, when you had that experience and you walked away from that and all those things going through your mind, like, my God, if I would have, you know, tripped the wrong way or something, I could have broken my neck, could have people thought I had killed myself. I mean, what are you thinking now about just your safety in this house? I mean, obviously you're recognizing that it's starting to get dark and a bit scary, if not very scary. With what it possibly could have the power to do. But what are you thinking? I mean, how old were you at this time?
I was probably 16 at the time.
So you're not quite old enough really to get out on your own and say, I'm right. out. So, you know, you're kind of at the mercy of your mom saying, we're living in this house. Mm-hmm. What are you thinking about how to navigate the house going forward when you start to feel and have solid evidence that things are not the brightest there?
To be honest with you, and this might sound kind of crazy, but I just was like, okay, well, this is life. And this is the house I live in. And this is what I'm going to have to deal with. My friend Nick, who I said lived with me, him and I would do kind of like our own, I say mock investigations because we had no idea what we were doing. But we would try to do different things, like put an EVP recorder in the second floor when we were upstairs. And we would start to get stuff like evidence. Like we would hear somebody walking into the bathroom and turning the faucets on, like I said, or just banging around and things like that. And so we were like, wow, you know, like not only is it just, not only are we experiencing these things, but now we're actually catching stuff that we're like, okay, now we have proof. Now we can say to somebody, hey, you know, this house has got something going on and this is what we captured while we were here. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question, like I said, I just kind of got used to it. It's just how life was. And until we moved out, that's just how it was. And crazy enough, to this day, that let's say I was 16 then, we moved out when I was 18. I'm 36 now. Mm-hmm. I still have reoccurring dreams about that house where it's the same house, but a different situation. And this is at least once or twice a month. Wow. And I've been tempted so much to go back and just find out who's living there and say, hey, here is my experience. What's going on? Is there anything like that happening? But I don't want to disturb the family that's there, especially if whatever was there is no longer affecting anybody.
Sure. What was the history of the property? Have you ever looked into that to try and get any answers as to, you know, what this could possibly be? Do you think it was something that was kind of lying dormant in the house till you showed up, or maybe it was active even prior before you guys got there?
I think, well, my mom has told me a little bit of the history behind it. And the previous owner's father was a man who fought in Vietnam. He was exposed to some of, I think it was Agent Orange was one of the things that they were having to deal with. And so he was having a lot of struggles with that before he passed. And as well as he hated kids, from what I understood, he absolutely hated children. So mm-hmm. we were there. I think his spirit was still tied to the house. And since he wasn't necessarily the kindest man while he was here, that spirit still stayed there. And I think also there was other factors too of, you know, I don't know if human beings once they've passed can become shadow figures. I really don't, but you know, I think his energy was definitely there. And then it was amplified by our fear, which might've kind of brought in some of these other darker elements as well, if that makes sense.
So in your opinion, there was more than one thing to go or more than one entity there, one being possibly this man, this mm-hmm. this vet that had lived there, and other darker entities. So do you attribute some of the darker things, some of the, like the chain getting around the pull chain going around your neck to being something that was a bit darker? Or how do you tie the others in?
That's a good question too. And to be completely honest, I don't really know if they were separate. It feels separate. It does, you know, like I said, it's a lack of not knowing if a person could become a shadow figure or if this man, while he was in the spirit world, could manifest and create all of this chaos, mm-hmm. Just himself. Sure. But they felt different. I mean, there was the man standing over my bed was clearly a man. He had features. I could see his clothes, his face. I could remember kind of vivid details. There was, you know, these wrinkles on his cheeks and the, you know, the thick, heavy eyebrows and, you know, this backwards style looking hat. You know, I remember very vividly when these other entities, these like shadow figures or whatever, they were formless in a sense. They were silhouetted when you look at them. There was no real world detail to them. And all they were when you saw them was just pure anxiety and fear. You know, this other guy, you know, maybe he's in the spirit world and he's just messing with us. He's the one knocking pans off the wall, or he's the one I'm hearing talking to maybe his wife who has passed as well. Mm-hmm. And then these other things were the ones that came in and were really trying to harm us. That's the best way I could probably describe it.
What other things occurred in the house that pointed to these things are trying to harm you?
I gotta say the thing around the neck was the biggest. That Sure. was the biggest one. The other thing too is what happened in that house was really very draining, you know, so all these experiences along with the high energy that was there, this feeling to run constantly all the time, I feel like it really drained us and made us kind of like emotionally unstable. Cause like I said, I was young, I was dealing with a lot of depression then, but I think it was related to the house. I think it was feeding off of it and amplifying that, I would say.
What was going on with the rest of your family at the time? Not necessarily paranormally, but what, was there a lot of stress? Was there, you said you were fighting depression at the time. Was it a rough time in life for everybody in the household, just kind of going through things?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my mom, you know, thank God she's a cancer survivor, but she was going through it really bad then. Mm-hmm. She was also a single mother having to take care of three kids mm-hmm. by herself. So she really had, you know, no time to help herself and fight this thing and still be able to keep us, you know, doing well and fed and stuff like that. So my mom also was married to a man who was in the Navy at the time, and he was just, you know, one of the worst kind of people there is. And when he would come back after being away for a while, because he'd go on ships for months at a time, he would come back and they would just fight to no end. He would yell and scream and throw stuff. And of course, that made a lot of anxious moments for us as kids. Mm-hmm. And so things like that were happening. Obviously, there was turmoil between my siblings and I. We were never getting along at that time. So there was a lot of fighting, a lot of arguing, a lot of negativity. And it could have very well been something of our own manifestation, to be honest. You know, they say poltergeists are something you create. And it could have very well been created by us.
Well, do you think it's something you created, or it's something, because these are very descript things. I totally understand, you know, like the poltergeist thing where energy can be really, you know, ramped up through very trying and traumatizing and emotional situations. And, you know, lights flicker, things move around a little bit. But that usually doesn't equate to large man standing over you in bed. You know, it's usually just kind of like odd, you know, aberrations that you go, well, that was weird.
Right, that's true.
But what you had seemed to be very descriptive. And I mean, so I'm not saying that there could have been those things added on top of it all, but were you almost just kind of sitting ducks there in this house that probably already had the, you know, it was just already there. It was ready to go. You basically moved into a ghost battery and yeah. You guys were fully charged and ready to go. And you refilled that thing. And were you, would you look at it that way at all, where maybe it was all of the anxiety and all of the depression and all of just the heavy feelings that you were all going through in your own different ways and your own different parts of life? Do you think that you were just kind of a beacon in a lighthouse that attracted things to come right in and do what it was going to do?
Absolutely. I mean, that is a great point. I mean, with all of that stuff going on, we were probably just like a feast for this thing that was there. You know, we come in, like I said, and that's probably why the gradual nature of this started to happen as well, because when we first came in, it wasn't all of that, you know, that those negative feelings and the arguing and the fussing and the fighting that mm-hmm. kind of built up as the energy built up. So yeah, I'm sure we were just, you know, just giving this thing everything it needed to be growing to its full potential. And it was just like drinking us up, as well as causing all these horrific things.
As time progressed, did you stay in the house till you were 18? Is that what I'm understanding?
Yep, that's right.
Okay. So as time progressed and you got, you know, closer and closer to that age, how did things progress in the house? Did it just keep getting worse and worse?
It stayed consistently, like, you know, things knocking on the doors and, you know, having that feeling of wanting to run and the shadow figures. Like I said, it sounds insane, but we really did get used to it. Mm-hmm. There was no other choice. It was either... it'd just be like, okay, yep, there you are again. Or like, you know, something would fly up the shelf and be like, yeah, okay, all right, I see ya. you know, trying to be more like, all right, you're here, we're here. You know, what are we going to do about it? You know, we could either let it rip us to pieces and kind of emotionally and stuff, or we could just be like, yep, this is what it is. And so mm-hmm. I think that's what we kind of did closer to moving out. And when we got the opportunity, I remember my mom telling us, hey, you know, I found a place. We're going to be moving out here in about a month. I was just like, I was elated, but then again, I was scared because I had done a little bit of research and I'd seen that, you know, sometimes these things can follow you to different mm-hmm. homes. So I was like, well, I'm so looking forward to get out of here. But I was like, well, what if it follows us? Mm-hmm. Thankfully it didn't. But yeah, leading up to leaving that house, it was just kind of like, okay, this is par for the course. And there's no other place else to stay. So we're just going to have to embrace it. The violent stuff started to subside, thankfully. The thing around the neck, that was the absolute worst of the violent stuff that would happen, you know. But there were definitely times where, you know, doors would slam right in your face, which was pretty unsettling. Sometimes you'd go down the stairs, you'd lose your footing a little bit, and you'd wonder, you know, am I losing my footing because I'm clumsy? Mm-hmm. Or does something actually push me? You know, it's just weird things like that started to run through your mind when I was there. And it got confusing at times, but it was just kind of like, okay, here's life. This is what we're going to have to do. And let's just hunker down and get through it.
Was there anything when you look back on it that you could say before a big event, something triggered it? Was there anything you could say, we did this, we did that, we said this, we said that, we, you know, interactions with somebody, just life events? Was there anything like that you can point to and go, when these sort of things would happen, then usually something paranormal would kick in?
Yeah. And it's, you know, I'm glad you're asking that, because as you're talking, I'm recalling things that, you know, I hadn't thought about in a long time. But there was one in particular, two different incidences, actually, that I'm thinking, wow, that could really have sparked some of this stuff. I was dating a girl when I was younger. When I was 15, she was like my first girlfriend. Like I said, my mom was going through a lot of stuff, so she wasn't always the nicest about things. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, my girlfriend had shown up at kind of a ridiculous time of the night, because we were kids. That's what kids do. We do ridiculous things. Mm-hmm. So she came at the ridiculous time of night. My mom actually called the cops on her. And because I was dealing with so much depression, because I was so angry at her, and yet I was so guilty for, like, I wanted to yell at her, but I couldn't, because I was like, no, she's dealing with enough. I can't express that sort of anger to her. Mm-hmm. I remember I took it out on myself. And like I said, I dealt with depression. So I ended up taking a razor blade, and I remember cutting myself about 6 times pretty deep that night. Mm-hmm. And so that, I think, definitely helped charge what's going on. There was another time too, where my brother and I were getting into it. We were fighting, as we usually did. And I was pretty intimidated by him. You know, he's a lot bigger than me. He would, you know, him and I always would fight. And I'd say to my mom, like, hey, you know, he's picking on me. He's hitting me. He's beating me up. And she'd be like, well, just hit him back. And I'm thinking to myself, well, yeah, that's great for you to say. I just don't want to end up in the hospital, because that's exactly what he would have done. Mm-hmm. But one time we were upstairs on the third floor. He came in all supercharged, all mad. I must have done something that set him off. I don't remember now, but he was standing at the top landing where the stairs were, and I was in my room. So his back was to the stairs. And I remember just being overwhelmed with anger because he had said something that kind of I didn't agree with. And I pushed him, and I was like, you know, screamed something, and he almost fell down the stairs as well. And I remember being shocked and terrified, like, one, you know, how could I be that angry to do something like that, potentially paralyzing him if he had fallen down the stairs, and two, like, you know, that wasn't me. So it was kind of shocking. But surrounding those events that were happening very close together, I think could have definitely contributed to ramping up that negative emotion and that negative energy.
Yeah. Do your siblings at all talk today about the house when you guys look back on it?
My sister later in life, I mean, this was maybe 6 years ago, is mm-hmm. when she first was like, oh my God, like, you guys felt something too. My brother absolutely doesn't talk about it. My friend Nick, who had lived with us for a while, he will talk about it, but he's just mostly what he'll say is like, yeah, man, that place was messed up. And he'll just kind of leave it at that. So we don't usually talk about it much. It is definitely in the back of our minds. And if it's brought up, we're like, oh man, yeah, well, this happened or that happened. And so we do share back stories back and forth. And usually when we do, my mom looks at us like we all have 10 heads, because she's like, nothing happened to me there. And we're just sitting there like, how could you possibly say that? So yeah, we still recall those moments, and we still share stories from time to time.
Does your sister feel that it was as dark as your view is of it?
She honestly wasn't there a lot. And, you know, she's probably one of the luckier ones, because she would run away a lot. And mm-hmm. maybe that's why I never actually pried into her to find out if that was the case. But she would run away a lot. She was never, ever, ever there. As a matter of fact, her room became a storage area with just cardboard boxes everywhere. And that was, again, on the second floor. And I recall so many times being in the living room and hearing someone walking back and forth in her room, and you would know that that's impossible, because you wouldn't be able to see the floor, let alone walk through it. So that was probably a reason why she was never there. Maybe that was happening to her while she was there, and she just didn't want to say anything, and so she'd run away. It's kind of crazy.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Christopher J. Brown about the haunted house that he grew up in. In part two of our conversation, we'll ask, are the dreams that Chris has to this day about the haunted house of paranormal origin or traumatic origin? Does Chris feel that the entities in the house ever had a goal? Does Chris think that the ghosts or dark entities can literally kill people using objects in our environment when others will say it was a natural cause or something dark? And what were some of the things that Chris learned from his experiences in that house that he's been able to take into his field of paranormal investigations? All of that and more in part two of our conversation. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our show. Sign up to be one on our website, patreon.com/thegravetalks or thegravetalks.com, and click become a Gravekeeper. $5 a month gets you access to part two of this conversation and all of our conversations. Quite literally hundreds of interviews ready for you to binge away on, all commercial free. patreon.com/thegravetalks to get in on all of it and help keep our show on the air. Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.